Welcome to Weekly Insights at Winthrop Capital Management, where we discuss recent developments currently shaping the markets and industries in the global economy. Here's your host, Chief Investment Officer Greg Hahn.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome. I'm Greg Hahn, Chief Investment Officer for Winthrop Capital Management, and in me in the studio is Amy, Production Coordinator. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning.
And Adam Koons.
Good morning.
The man, the myth, the legend, head of trading. How was your weekend?
It was a good weekend, despite the weather.
Well, if you're a royal watcher, it's sad news. Prince Philip passed away this weekend, 99 years old. Not a, what a life, though. So anyway, that's news from across the pond. Let's talk about news closer to home.
Sure.
So we've got an economy that is accelerating. So our base case scenario for this economy, we're going to cover the economy. We're going to talk about what's going on with the equity market and then earnings coming up. We'll talk about fixed income. So we're going to go deeply into some of this stuff, but just kind of an overview, our base case is that the economy would accelerate as the vaccines, we assume the vaccines are going to be effective at controlling the spread of the coronavirus that will be in the latter stages of a spreading pandemic, not only domestically, but globally, and that with that, parts of the economy that have been shut down will ultimately reopen. And that's beyond restaurants and hotels, but also includes things like conventions, entertainment, sporting events, and so on. It's not going to happen all at once, but step by step, the second half of the year, we expect to see a pretty significant surge. So we describe it now that we're at the intersection of the vaccine and the spreading of the virus. And the vaccine, from all indications, has been pretty effective, with the exception of a few states where there's still an acceleration in the spread of the virus. And that includes, I think, Michigan leading the way, and Florida are two of the states. But other than that, I think it appears that it's been effective. The markets are loving it. And the Fed, what's really interesting, Adam, is the Fed's not backing off.
Nope.
Chairman Powell is a foot on the gas, saying, hey, we're not through the woods. We're going to continue to provide accommodation. And he does not want to see this stock market show any signs of volatility or fragility. And I think it really gets down to the labor market and capital investment, as he does not want companies backing off rehiring and their capital investment. So the big news this last couple of weeks, really, but this last week, has been this big push for a 1.9 fiscal stimulus package. And then with that real initiative to increase the corporate tax rate, which in many cases has gone to zero for large companies, but putting a minimum corporate tax that would be with our global partners. Mm-hmm. Now, whether this can get through or not remains to be seen. But it's going to be... I think that it's going to have more of an impact on investors in the stock market than it is on the economy.
Agreed.
So we'll see. So with that, let's talk about what's going on in your world. What are you seeing in the equity market?
The news over the weekend, I think, obviously, was Alibaba and Ant Group. So China has kind of come down pretty hard on Ant. They're going to regulate it. There were some fines. And I think what we're really seeing here is China has taken a backseat to domestic companies and let them grow and let them run pretty freely. But if you look at what those companies have been in the past, they're kind of harmless companies, right? They sell products, they sell entertainment. But Ant Group has grown to be quite a large financial giant, which is really the Chinese government's stronghold, is their financial markets and credit flow. So that's really how they've dictated growth, expansion, and controlled a lot of things. And now that you've got a company within that is growing, I mean, they've got 1 billion users now on Alipay. I mean, that's incredible.
Right. Their whole niche was providing individual loans for consumers, and that steps in the way of the government.
It does.
The government wants to control that.
Mm-hmm. So that's why you're seeing such a divergence from what the Chinese government has done in the past with domestic companies. And, you know, there shouldn't be any surprise here, but it seems like Jack Ma is going to play ball because there's just too much to lose here. And so, you know, I think they're going to kind of write the way that they need to so the Chinese government lets them do the IPO, but it's just going to come in a different form.
Yeah. So it's going ahead, though.
It's going to go ahead, yeah.
Yeah. So China, and this comes out in our next economic outlook, our letter, is the form of capitalism that China has is called authoritarian capitalism. And it's controlled by a central state, and the beneficiary, the stakeholder, is largely the government. Whereas in the United States, we have Western capitalism, which was just redefined. You know, the purpose of the corporation was redefined by the Business Roundtable, but really gets into our form of capitalism and the benefit to the stakeholders, not just the shareholder. But right. These are, you know, it's a ownership that's broadly based now with the 401ks and ETFs and index funds is broadly owned by the population, right? So that's Western capitalism, and China. Both forms have their regulation. We have our regulation. They have their regulation. So I think that it's going to be interesting to see over the next decade how China's form of capitalism spreads around the world.
Right.
And the way that's going to be really interesting is the electric car, the NIO.
Yes.
And how with their trading partners like Pakistan, Iran, countries that we aren't trading with, they are. And we're going to see China actually have an export, I think, of an electric car, which up until now, you really don't see China. You'd see South Korea.
Right.
Right? But not China. So it's going to be interesting. Okay, we're coming up on earnings season.
We are.
What are your thoughts?
So, you know, obviously the first quarter, the bar was pretty low. And so companies were able to get above that. And that bar was raised quite a bit through guidance. You know, through the pandemic, you saw a lot of companies remove guidance. You've seen them put that back in. So in a lot of ways, I would say we're set up to fail because we have raised that bar. The expectations are quite a bit higher. So it's really just going to be, how does this stimulus check flow through, and how is the consumer using it? Are they spending? Are they going to stores and restaurants and whatnot? I can tell you from going out myself, it seems like they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of bars and restaurants are at capacity with 40-minute waits.
Wow.
You go into, I mean, even this weekend, Freddie and I went to a couple places, and, you know, we had to try four different places before we found a place that we could sit down at.
Wow. And it wasn't McDonald's.
It wasn't McDonald's. We had to progressively move up our scale of where we wanted to go until we went to the highest end place in Carmel. So
there you go.
But yeah, I went to the mall too, and it's crowded. You see people with shopping bags. So
yeah, and that's part of the theory is that the demise of the shopping mall, I think, is not. I think people want to get back out. But in the first quarter, Adam, we saw this rotation out of the high tech names. Even though the stock market was up, we saw, you know, the S&P was posting this big record number, but underneath the layers, we're seeing more of the COVID affected industries. Some call them cyclical, some call them value stocks. But really, what it is in the first quarter was kind of the tech names kind of normalized.
They did, but what's interesting is over the last 30 days, that's reversing again.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you saw the COVID affected industries, your quote unquote value or cyclicals outperforming, and they still are outperforming quite a bit on a year to date basis. I mean, you're looking at energy is up 27% versus tech is only up 10%. Well, I say only is up 10%.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as a great example, as we use as a metric is the equal weight S&P is up 14% versus the S&P is up 10%. So you can see, you know, those smaller cap and COVID-affected industries are still outperforming year-to-date. But when you look on the last 30 days, energy's down 10%. Technology's actually up 7%. So you are seeing, and this is corresponding with the fact that interest rates have kind of stalled out, right? So over the past 3 weeks, interest rates really have not gone above 175 on the 10-year. And we're actually at 165 today. So there still is this high correlation of what interest rates are doing and how technology does.
So there's a client sent a fascinating video on Microsoft's new product, which is on Azure AI.
Yeah.
And it's the, so you put on the headgear, you know, the three-dimensional headgear, and it basically takes your form, your body, your voice, and turns it into a hologram. And you can give a talk in any language. It'll translate whatever you're saying to any language, and there's no prep other than you're just really speaking. It was amazing to watch. And so this, I think, is the Microsoft next push. It's going to be really interesting.
Well, so they just bought Nuance. That was the news today for $1.6 billion. And, you know, I think that, yeah, I mean, Microsoft's doing a lot of things right. And if you look at Siri, it's kind of considered the number three on the AI voice recognition. Nuance is considered number one, with Google number two. And so I think integrating this with their, you know, business suite and things like Teams and presentations, I think makes a lot of sense too. I think, you know, Microsoft's just getting it right now.
Yeah, it's still probably my favorite company. Yeah. At least it was last year, and heading into this year, they are just doing amazing things. So we've got earnings start out this week with financials, right?
Mm-hmm.
So JP Morgan leads the pack, or?
That sounds right.
Yeah,
they kind of all come through.
So Jamie Dimon's letter, 66 pages long, is I personally feel that his annual letter has become a must read in the financial world.
Yeah.
And this one's a long one, so buckle up. He has a lot to say on a lot of issues. Now, shockingly, it's going to be pro bank, so don't be surprised. But he addresses issues around structural problems in the economy and around China. And I think it's a real honest letter from that standpoint. He also points out that banks are playing an increasingly smaller role in the financial system, mm-hmm. which is a growing risk, because the shadow banking system then is less regulated where banks aren't. But yeah, I think it also didn't come out and say it. It deals with some of the structural issues that banks have post-Glass-Steagall. But I think it's from the reading that I do, it's worth it. It's a fascinating read. You kind of slog through the early part of it to, I think, get to the meat of it. So anyway, that was my note for those looking for something to read. Anything else on your plate?
I guess just talk, you know, fixed income markets real quick. So just, you know, on a year-to-date basis, if you're in treasuries or you're feeling some pain, the long treasury ETF TLT is down 12% year to date. So, you know, a lot of investors that are in a traditional 60-40 just using treasuries are not feeling the love from fixed income. And really what that's driven by is this growth and inflation expectation. You know, the Fed, as you said, Powell has said that they will let inflation run to 3%. And it seems like the Fed now is less forward-looking and looking at what's happening right now, which I think is, you know, an effect of the fact that Powell is a less economic academic. So he's not relying on models, right, to tell us what's going to happen in 2 years. He's saying what's happening right now, and we're going to let the economy run. So, you know, the 10-year hit 174 was its peak, currently trading at 165. But, you know, that puts interest rates up over 60 basis points from the start of the year.
So how high can rates go?
Well, I mean, that's the interesting thing. I mean, if you just, let's just use pre-pandemic as the base case. I mean, this could run above 2% just to get back to that level. And so I guess theoretically you could see a 2.5 10-year if this really does run hot. I think personally, I know you and I disagreed a little bit on this. I think that's unlikely. I think the bond market right now is saying, hey, we have all the information and there's not enough to push this. And that's why it stalled out.
Yeah. So if even at 2.5% inflation, if you have a 2.5% treasury, that's a
zero
real rate of returns, or real yield, excuse me. So I mean, part of what we're doing is this. You have to remember, this is what we're going through is not normal. So to take kind of normal comparisons, like the employment rate and what's going on in this post pandemic world, where we've got so much of the economy is limping, and parts of it are very, very strong, but parts of it have been just huge government support behind it, is just not normal,
right?
So let's look at office vacancy just for a second. So the nationwide, the office vacancy rate is 16.4%. So companies, you know, everybody went work remote. You mentioned Microsoft Teams, great product. We use it. I personally, you know, you may disagree with me on this. I personally do not believe that we are in this work remote world for a sustained period of time. I just believe that if you run a company, it is really, really hard to manage people remote and get collaborative work and hold people to a time schedule and accountability. It works for certain jobs like call centers, I think.
Right.
But I think what we're going to see, remember, it wasn't 5 years ago that we had this big push where companies were tearing down their offices and having collaborative workspaces because employee morale was higher and
yeah.
it was, you know, for talent retention. And so all those are sitting, gathering dust. You go through a pandemic, people want to now have social distance. So we'll see what that collaborative sure. workspace starts to look right. like. But if you manage people, watch what happens is they're going to want them back in the office. They'll give them a choice. I think that that's going to be a big push because right now it's actually helping the bottom line, just like it did
Absolutely,
during
yeah.
the financial crisis.
Yeah.
And so this cut in office space, I think, has more to do with supporting profit margins than it does for a new way to manage an employee workforce. So anyway, that's my somewhat cynical view of what's about to happen in the office space. So we've increased our REIT exposure. We're kind of dabbling on the edges of the office space. We added Simon to our portfolios earlier this year. We like that holding. We think that that's going to play out as people go back to shopping, right? So anyway, these are interesting times. So with that, anything else on your plate, Adam?
Nothing here.
Thank you all for listening, and we will talk with you during the week.
All investments are subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. The information presented in this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and does not take into consideration your personal circumstances or other factors that may be important in making investment decisions. You may access and download this podcast only for your personal and non-commercial use. You may not use it in any other manner or for any other purpose without Winthrop's written permission. Copyright 2020, Winthrop Capital Management, LLC. All rights reserved.